Okay, we're up to the beginning of Perek Samach Aleph. Okay, new Perek Samach Aleph. Ruach Hashem, Ruach Hashem Elokim Oloi. The Spirit of Hashem is upon me. This Perek, at least the beginning of the Perek, Yeshaya describes his role as a prophet. There are a few different sections in Sefer Yeshaya where Yeshaya describes his role, he was recruited by Kadosh Baruch Hu, his calling. So here he describes in some places his frustration, he describes the abuse, he describes his desire to be a prophet, and especially in Perek, I think it was the Perek, the Ma'aseh Merkava, Perek Tes, or Perek Vav, I think Perek Vav, the Ma'aseh Merkava, and there he describes that Kadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him the very first time, and he said, who wants to be a prophet? And Yeshaya says, I want to be a prophet. So here again, we have that theme appears again, once again, in this thing, this Perek, Ruach Hashem Elokim Oloi, the Spirit of Hashem Elokim is upon me. Yahan, therefore, or Yan Ba'avur, here the Mitzudos translates the word Yan, it's a difficult word to translate, Yan Ba'avur. Why is the Spirit of Hashem Elokim upon me? So that, Ba'avur, Moshach Hashem Osi, it doesn't flow well, these words. So that Hashem has anointed me in order, we already know that. We know that from the first four words of the Pasuk. But let's, for the moment, translate it according to the Mitzvah. So that Moshach Hashem, Osi Hashem has anointed me. Now that's a little bit difficult because there's no such thing as being anointed as a prophet. Only ones that were anointed were kings and Kohanim Gedolim. And in fact, a king does not need to be anointed because the Malchus goes to be Yerusha. So technically speaking, right, it's not literal in Echnami, so technically, but we do have exceptions where kings were anointed where there was a Machloikis because of Rechavim. The Gemara says that technically if there's no dispute, if there's no fights, everyone is pleased with who the next king will be, then there's no need to anoint the new king because the Malchus goes down to be Yerusha. Only in a situation where there's someone that's trying to usurp the throne, like you had Rechavam, Shlomo, Yeravam, that was Rechavam and Yeravam. So Rechavam had to be anointed because Yeravam wanted the Malchus for himself, and indeed he did split off. And even Shlomo, Yehoyada ben Chagis, Mesnase Lemar Ani Emloch. So, what was his name? I just say his name is? What was his name again? Ben Chagis. Misnase Leimar Ani Emloch. That's why Bathsheba went to David and complained, what is going on? Did you not promise that your son, the son that I will have, will be the Melech? How come this person over here is having a party and he invite all of the officers, the cabinet, and me, and Shlomo he did not invite? And David said, today, on this very day, I'm going to anoint your son Shlomo as the Melech in my lifetime. And they had to be anointed because of the Machloikis of whatever his name was, Ben Chagis, because of this Machloikis. Therefore, that's why he was anointed. But generally speaking, Kohen Gadol, Kohen Gadol must be anointed because Kohen Gadol is not Yerusha, it's only through appointment. And therefore, the Kohen Gadol indeed was anointed. But we don't find anywhere any requirement that a prophet is anointed. Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't find he was anointed. So like you said, it's to be taken figuratively.
Is the Kohen Meshuach Milchama anointed?
Yes, I think so. I think they do anoint him, if I'm not mistaken. They anoint him because that's he wears the big day Yeshmoina, so he must be anointed. So here we have no choice but to say the word Moshach is not to be taken literally. It's a figurative expression. It means that he has been appointed. What?
Appointed.
He's been appointed. We have it also by Koresh. Also, I think it says Koresh was anointed. Doesn't mean that he was anointed. It means that he was designated by Kadosh Baruch Hu to serve a role and to bring the Jewish people back to Yerushalayim. Okay. So Moshach Hashem Osi Levaser Anavim Levaser means to announce good news to the humble. Anav Magvistu means the humble, and to announce good tidings to those that are humble. Period. Shelochani, he has sent me lachavosh, to bandage lenishperei lev, those have broken hearts, people that are depressed and sad. their hearts are broken. The role of a prophet is to bandage their broken hearts. Likro lishvuyim dirar, to declare for the captives freedom, to make it known to the world that the Jewish people who are captives in foreign lands among their enemies, in Golus, are now free. Dirar means there's freedom. They can return back home to Yerushalayim, Vila Asurim, and to those that are imprisoned, locked up in jail, Pekach Koach. Pekach means to open up, Koach means to take. So these two words go together. There is a message that connects these two words. Someone learned that Pekach and Koach are the same word. Both have the Kuf and the Ches. So it's a intense form of opening up. For example, we have Dam, red. And how do we refer to a nega? How do we refer to a nega and a garment? Adam dum, adam dum dam. And when you repeat those two letters twice, adam dum or yurak rak, it's green or yellow, whichever color it is. We're not exactly sure which color it is, but yurak. When you repeat this, the shurish twice, yurak rak or adam dum. So it's same exact thing here. Pekach, pekach means to open. Koach also means to open. The two words are put together. There's a message that connects them, which means that the role of the prophet is to announce, to tell the prisoners, you are free. Pekach means you are free to go. You are being released. And not just we'll open up the doors and let you figure out how to get out of here. No, we'll come. You're so free. We'll show you. We'll give you a course in what freedom really means. That's one interpretation. The Mitzvah appears to learn it most simply. Pekach means to open up their eyes, and koach means it's a separate word. It's not the same thing as open. It means to take. I'm here to open up your prison cell and to take you, to release you from here and bring you to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so let's just see over here the words of the Mitzvah. There's some important ideas here I want to bring out. In the Mitzudos, he says, let's just jump down to the end of the Mitzudos, where he says, Vila Asurim, in Pasik Aleph, the end of the Mitzudos, Vila Asurim, to those that are in prison, Linabos, to prophesy, Al Ho Asurim, the Gola, concerning those that are locked up in the exile, Sheyiftach Ma'asram, that their imprisonment shall be open, the reins, the different, the bands, those that are imprisoned, that means they're tied up, they're shackled. They're shackled in a prison cell. The yilgichu min hagolos. Koach means to take, to open up their shackles, and to take them out of Golos. If you look in the Mitzudos Tzion, where it translates the words, pekach enyin pesicha, and koach miloshen lekicha. So I'm going to open up your prison cell, I'm going to open up the bands that tie you down to your in captivity, and I'm going to take you with me free to return to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that's the end. Now let's go back to the beginning of the pasuk. Yan. If we go to the Mitzudos David in Dibur Hamaschil Yan Ba'avor. Why? For what purpose did I call it as the spirit of Hashem Elokim upon me? It's Yan. It's so that. So the Mitzudos says Ba'avor. Ki Hashem Moshach Osi, Hashem has anointed me, has designated me, Levaser Es Hanavim, to bring good news to the humble. V'sholchani Lasos, and He has sent me to serve as a doctor. Lasos Tachboshes Lenishbur Leiv, to bandage, to apply bandages to those that are of broken heart. Rotzalaymar Lenabos Nechoma, to prophesize comfort, lehamitztarim al ichor hageula, to prophesy, to give comfort to those that have pain over the delay of the geula. Now, the difficulty with this interpretation is, why is there a repetition of Yan? Ruach Hashem Elokim, this Olai, the spirit of Hashem is upon me, Yan, so that I should be designated to announce good news to the humble. Okay, and it's not necessarily difficult. There are two things. The spirit of Hashem is upon me, and that spirit was for the purpose that I should serve a role. Rav Schwab has a beautiful interpretation. He says that Ruach Hashem Elokim refers to Midas Hadin. Hashem Elokim, the Aleph Dalet Nun Yod is, yes, of course. is adnus, is expression of din, and then yud kei vav kei, when yud kei vav kei appears after the letters aleph dalet nun yun, so we know that we read it Elohim. Normally we read it Hashem. So here we're reading it, I don't know the exact details, but when you have these two words together, somehow it refers to an expression of din. And based upon that approach, he then explains Yan as not Ba'avur, but because I was willing to accept din, the reward was I would serve as the mouthpiece, the announcer for Rachamim. In other words, when the pasuk goes on to say Yan Moshach Hashem Osi Levaser Anovim, that's good news. That's an expression of mercy to bring good news to the humble. Shelochani Lachavosh Lenishber Leif, to bandage the broken spirit, those that have a broken heart. That is an expression of rachanim, to bring mercy to people that are suffering. Likro l'shuyim d'ror, to declare freedom for those that are captives. V'lasudim pekach koach, and to declare to those that are imprisoned that you are free to go. These are expressions of pity, of mercy. Why is Yeshaya the Navi of Nechama? Yirmiyah is the Navi of gloom and doom, and Yeshaya is the Navi of Nechama. The Shiva, the Nechemta, all come from Yeshaya. Chazal tell us the entire Sefer Yeshaya is Divrei Nechumim, our words of comfort. It's hard for us to understand that because it appears that most of Sefer Yeshaya, until Perek Nun, is not Divrei Nechama, it's Divrei Musar, it's harsh Musar. Yet Chazal somehow read into the words of the Musar that there is a slant, there are hidden words of Nechama. Whereas Yirmiyah, even though in Yirmiyah we do definitely find words of Nechama, but the focus of Yirmiyah was Musar, was gloom and doom. So Yeshaya here in this pasuk, according to Rav Schwab's interpretation, is interpreting, is telling us why he was Zoiche, did he merit to be the prophet that would bring Nechama to Klal Yisrael. It's because he took upon himself Midas Hadin. He was willing to suffer. He was willing to take upon himself the ruach of not just the good. I'm willing to take upon myself the suffering for Klal Yisrael of Din. Ruach Hashem Elokim Aloi. Yeshaya says, now we don't exactly know what that means exactly, but we just take the pasuk. Yeshaya says, the spirit of din was upon me. As a young man, I suffered very, very much. I was makabel upon myself in yisurim, afflictions. We don't know exactly where we see this, but that's what the pasuk... What?
Because he got all this abuse for...
Correct, but Yirmiyah also...
So
but Yirmiyah,
he went through that...
But Yirmiyah also went through a lot of abuse. He was seemingly Yirmiyah was abused even more.
Right.
Yirmiyah was thrown to the dungeon. His life hung was he barely survived. Hoshea suffered. Micha suffers. All the prophets suffered abuse. So it's not clear why Yeshaya suffered more abuse than the other prophets. But nevertheless, the pasuk does say over here that Yeshaya says the ruach Hashem Elokim Aloi. I accepted upon myself the spirit of Midas Hadin. I suffered very, very much.
Because of the length of his saying?
I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't.
How long should it be?
86 years.
86 years, a long time.
86 years, the same number of years that Klal Yisrael suffered in Mitzrayim. The Sheba. The Sheba was also 86. Very interesting. It must be. What?
Moshe Rabbeinu was not known for 86 years.
Moshe Rabbeinu was there from 80. So Moshe Rabbeinu was from the year from 80 and on for 40 years. 40 years.
And Hashem didn't speak to him for how many years?
Well, we don't know all the details. The Pasuk only tells us, only things that we need to know for all generations. But we don't really know what happened in Moshe's lifetime, those first 80. We just know a little bit in the beginning when he was born. And we know he grew up in the palace. That is also not even mentioned in the Torah, that he grew up in the palace of Mitzrayim. I don't think that says it anywhere. It's a medrash. All we know is, one day he went out, Vayar, and he saw two Jews fighting. First he saw a Mitzri kill a Jew, and so he killed a Mitzri. And the next day he saw two Jews fighting, and he said to him, "Lama sakas reyecha?" And the Mitzri and the Jew said, "You're going to kill me like you killed a Mitzri?" So, and he fled. So we know the Torah tells us almost nothing about the life of Moshe Rabbeinu until he was 80 years old, until all of a sudden he was pasturing, he was shepherding his sheep, and he saw the burning bush. He was 80 years old at that time. What happened the first 80 years? 2-3 psukim? Almost nothing. Okay, but Yeshaya, we also do not know. These are secrets. But I just find it's a beautiful idea. And it totally changes the word Yan. Yan, therefore, means therefore, not ba'avur, according to Rav Schwab. Many words in Tanakh can have multiple meanings. Because of the Ruach Hashem Elokim Olai, I accepted upon myself din, I suffered, I took the hard road. I didn't look for shortcuts. Today we live in a world where everything is a shortcut. You have to outsmart the whole world, find the biggest shortcut to make it big. That's what it's all about, right? Isn't that the whole world that we live in today? Yeshaya says, by me there was no shortcuts. I took a long, hard, difficult road. Ruach of Midas Hadin. And because I suffered, Yan, therefore, it's I who merited to bring the one that would bring to Klal Yisrael good news. Words of Nechama, words of Bracha, the words of that will ultimately bring the Geula Bimos HaMashiach.
The ultimate abuse didn't take place yet. I mean, he was killed by his grandson.
Yeah.
So
he was 120 years old. He was murdered in cold blood by Menashe. I don't know. Okay, you're right.
Let me ask you, Moshe Rabbeinu said, time to go to Israel. How can I care about myself? I didn't raise him. So that was his way of protest, right? And Hashem said, okay, I'll give you help. Did Yeshaya ever protest or put a
Did Yeshaya ever protest HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I don't know the details. In the beginning of Yeshaya, Hashem was, he asked him if he's interested in Perek Vav. If you go back to Perek Vav, by the let's see, Perek Vav, it says over here Pasuk Ches. Paragraph Pasiches, Vo Eshma es kol Hashem Oimer Esmi Eshlach Umi Yelech Lanu. Who wants to be a prophet? Who shall I send to the people to tell them words of Musar? Who will go for us? I don't know. Lanu, yeah, Hashem is speaking. What does it mean, Lanu? Like Hashem said, Nase Adam. Let us make man. He spoke. He concluded the Malachim together with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Oimar, and Yeshaya says, Hineni. Shalocheni, here I am. I'm ready to go. So you see here in Pasuk Perek Vav, Pasuk Ches, that he accepted the mission out of his own free will. Hashem did not force him to serve as a prophet.
Moshe said, "Send me, send me."
Shlach ma biatishlach. Shlach ma biatishlach. And Hashem said, "No, it's going to be you. You have no choice. You must." So dear Hashem was right. So you're saying something very interesting. You say that Moshe Rabbeinu was forced. He was pretty much forced to serve as a prophet. Yeshaya was his own free will. Mi yelech lanu. Hashem doesn't say over here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to persuade him on his own. I'm willing to go. I'm willing to serve in this role. It's a very good point. So to analyze the difference between Yeshaya and Moshe Rabbeinu and how they accept their Mashiach.
Yeah, maybe it's the far off drish on prisoners.
Yeah.
Prisoners twice, maybe not necessarily a jail. They were prisoners of
their minds.
Of let's say, what do you call it? Of Avayzara, of theirs.
They couldn't break away from their. Yeah.
And he redeemed them rather than prisoners. Jail.
Yeah, of course, right. It doesn't necessarily mean literally they were locked up in prison.
Right.
It means they're in their mind.
Were in prison.
Their mind were in prison, right. The greatest prisoner is one in the mind. You have to free yourself from false beliefs and you can't break free from your addiction to Avodah Zarah and all these different types of false and mistaken beliefs. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so let's go further than that, just look at the Rashi. Rashi's point of the thing we mentioned with Mashiach. It's not to be taken literally. Yan Mashach ein Mashiach zo elaloshen sarara ugedula. So Rashi Fidark always says, don't take anything literally. That's one thing that we learned from the Rashi's in Yeshaya. Don't take anything literally. It's really amazing because it's not the way Rashi lives in Chumash. Rashi in Chumash is always a balance. It's a balance between Pshat and Medrash. You study Rashi, and we see we take it for granted because we learn Rashi from when we're children, but until Rashi came along, there were two mahalachim in learning Chumash. There was a mahalach in Chumash, you learn everything pshat. Everything must be 100% literal. And then there was a mahalach, nothing ever happened. All of the stories you learn in Chumash, they never happened. They're all prophecies, they're all mashalim. When the Brisbane Absarim and Lavan, and all the, they were just dreams. There are Rishonim that say this. Ramban. There are things that we think happened for real, and you'll go look in the Ramban. The Ramban says, Lohoyit Ramayolam, this is just a prophecy. Hashem came to Avram in a dream and told him these things, but it never really happened. How can you say such a thing? But that's what it says in some of the Rishonim. But the other Mahalach, everything was shot. Rashi introduced an incredible chiddush that he said, Elu ve'elu, his parish, there are certain things which are to be taken literally, and there are certain things which are not to be taken literally. Just there's mishalim. Before a blind man, don't put a stumbling block. So does that mean literally? Don't put a stumbling block in front of a blind man. So according to some, there were some parshanim at the time of the before Rashi, earlier times even before the Rishonim, they take the pasuk literally. Don't put a stumbling block. But let's say in business, you mislead a person to do something like this. Is really a mahalach of the stokim. It's something or something in business. You. No, there's no prohibition. Maybe dina de garmi, de grama, but there's no prohibition of lifting even lo sitin mirshal. Then there are other mafarshim that says no. When it says lifting even lo sitin mirshal, it's to be taken symbolically. It's only a metaphor. Ad kedei kach. What would the halacha be if you take a stumbling block, a real brick, and put it in front of a blind man and cause him to stumble? Have you violated the lois hasel lifting even lo sitin mirshal? No. Because that's not what the pasuk means. The pasuk is not to be taken literally. There were two mahalchim, and their people did not get along. And how to understand and interpret the Torah? Rashi was an incredible innovator. He a trailblazer. He was a new approach to learning Chumash. There are certain things that to be taken literally, and there are certain things to be taken figuratively, not to be taken literally. And it's a very delicate balance. And he completely changed the whole mahalach in learning Chumash. We take this for granted because for over 1,000 years, it's pasha to us. That's how you learn Chumash. But until Rashi came along, that's not the way Chumash was understood. If you look in the Svarim that describe the biography of Rashi, they bring out this point. But when you learn Yeshaya, it's very interesting. I don't know other Svarim, but you learn Yeshaya almost always. Rashi says, don't take the Pesukim literally. Everything is to be interpreted based upon Midrashim, based upon... doesn't necessarily mean that's the only way to interpret, but at least that's Rashi's perish on Yeshaya, what we have in front of us. And here he does that again when it says Mashiach, don't take it literally. It means Sarara. I'm sure you look in the Parashah, you'll find some Parashah that tell you that no, when it comes to prophets indeed did have such a thing of Mashiach. It could be. You have to go look because it says it in the Pasuk, and you have to understand what it means. I don't know. You have to. Okay, there's one other very important Medrash before we go to Pasuk Beis. The Medrash says, let me read you the Medrash, the Vayikra Rabbah. Standard Medrash, Ruach Hashem Olai. So the Medrash asks the question, what does it mean here that Yeshaya says about himself, Ruach Hashem Olai? V'chiyesh neviim she'ein aleim Ruach Hashem, are the prophets that don't have the spirit of Hashem? So the Medrash answers, yes, Ela shekol ha'neviim kiblu nevuos novi min novi. Prophecy, unbelievable idea. Prophecy was given from Rebbe to Talmud. Just like when it comes to Torah, you have a tradition, you receive your Torah, you got your Torah from your Rebbe, and your Rebbe got it from this Rebbe, which goes all the way back to Matan Torah. Prophecy? How does one receive prophecy? It's transmitted from generation to generation. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Av of the Nevi'im. Moshe gave over his koyach of Ruach, of prophecy to his Talmidim, to Yoshua, or to the Zakenim, and they selected students that were royal to serve as prophets, and gave over Ruach HaKodesh to them. It's not to be confused with Torah. Separate avenue. There is Mesoira in understanding Torah Shabbal Peh, Rebbe the Talmud, and then there is a Navi giving over Ruach HaKodesh to his students who will also be prophets. not Torah, not Talmidei Chachamim, a different approach. Let me give you examples.
Generally, the Navi had a father who was a Navi.
Correct. So the father would give it over one to the other. For example,
Amos said, was it Amos that said, I'm not a Ben Navi?
Oh, very good. I'm not a Navi, V'loi Ben Navi. Very good. So why is he saying I'm not a Ben Navi? I have not received the koyach of Nevuah from my predecessors, from my father. Excellent.
And we had this
Navi, we had Beeri. Yeah, Beeri. Right. The reason why those two psukma are included in the same, because his father was a prophet, so he was included. But look what it says here in this. Let me just read you the Medrash. The Medrash says, and it's a very important Medrash to understand Yeshaya, understand in general what prophecy is all about. Ella, Shakol HaNeviim Kiblu Nevuos Navi Min Navi. Shenema, what's the classic example? Moshe Rabbeinu giving over to the Zakenim. Vayotzel Min Horuach HaSher Olav. He bestowed from the spirit which was upon him upon the prophets. Vinemar, here is another very important pasuk of Eliyahu and Elisha. Who was Eliyahu's prized student, his protege? Elisha. And how did Elisha receive prophecy? He did not get it on his own. It was given over to him from Eliyahu. Shenem, it says, Vayomru nochar ruach Eliyahu al Elisha. After Eliyahu died, people took note that the spirit of Eliyahu has now been transferred to Elisha. It was given over from Eliyahu to his student Elisha. Aval Ata. So here we have a tremendous chiddush. When it comes to Yeshaya, Yeshaya did not receive his spirit of prophecy from a predecessor. Fresh. He was his own man. Aval Ata Yeshaya. He balto es hanavua mi pi hakadosh baruch hu. He got his koyach of nevua directly from Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Shenemar ruach Hashem Elokim olai yan moshach. That's what this pasuk here in Perek Samach Aleph tells. An incredible chiddush that Yeshaya is different than all of the other prophets. All the other prophets received their prophecy from their father, from their rebbe, from a previous prophet. They had the spirit of prophecy, and when their time came to go, they gave it over. Yeshaya was different. Yeshaya got his koyach directly from the source, directly from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Yeshaya is in a league to himself. You can't compare Yeshaya to other prophets. As you mentioned, many times when it says Yeshaya, when it says their name and their father's name, that means they were a prophet and their father was a prophet, which simply means that their father gave over the prophecy to their son. But Yeshaya, even if it's true that his father was a prophet, whatever the story was, but Yeshaya got prophecy directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's now a fundamental difference between the koyach of a Navi and the koyach of a Rebbe. There is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe is the Rebbe, the ultimate Rebbe, and Moshe is also the Av HaNeviim. He was also a Melech. Moshe Rabbeinu served many roles. Av Moshe, one of the 13 princes on Imam, is the Moshe Rabbeinu is the Av, the father of all prophets. We have two separate animanims, two of the 13 principles about prophecy. One is that shokol dire neviim emes, all the words of the prophets are emes, and there's a separate belief of the 13 principles is that Moshe Rabbeinu is the Av HaNeviim. Many of the Mefarshim are very disturbed why the Rambam had to break up prophecy into two separate principles. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Av HaNeviim, and all the other prophets, all of the words of the prophets here, MS, we have faith in what they said is MS. Why not just incorporate the two together since the two relate together? Okay, but whatever the answer is, it is. But the point here we want to make is that when it comes to a Rebbe, if a Rebbe does not have a Masorah going all the way back to Sinai, he's not a Rebbe. That's all part. I mean, today I don't know how it works today. Today you don't really have that. I mean, there is Masorah, yeah, but a lot of today in the yeshiva world, you have a certain Rosh Yeshiva. Who is he a Talmud of? Who did he learn by? And if he didn't learn by someone, if he's his own man, he never really learned by any major league Rosh Yeshiva, so right away, oh, so he's not, you know, he's not part of the Moetzes. he's not accepted. Because it's certainly true today to a certain degree. I've heard this about certain people. I've heard this that, yeah, he's a tremendous gon, but he never really, he's his own man. He didn't He didn't study under. He didn't learn.
He made it on his own.
He didn't learn by one of the gedolim of the previous generation. And the gedolim from the previous generation, they would tell me different others. So I always would say to people, so what? So today there's no such thing as a real messer anymore. Today we live in America, a big melting pot. Today you learn from svarim. As long as you sit and learn from svarim, so you don't really need today a messer. Today it's different. It's the melting pot. We've already come to Ixad the Mashiach. I'm not holding the air, but there is something to it. I'm partially wrong. I'm always wrong. But here I admit I'm wrong. There is something to it that in order for a person to be a true Talmud Chacham, there is a Messiah. And the Messiah, the Haidatim, today's Daf, yesterday's Daf, the Haidatim, Levanecha, Levnevanecha, Yoyma Shamat, Levnei Hashem, Lokecha Bukhariv. Torah comes from Sinai. It goes down. Moshe Kiv Torah Misin Moshe LeYoshua. LeYoshua LeZakenim. LeZakenim LeNevim. It went down the Mesorah. If you don't have that Mesorah, you're your own man. You're your own man. It's a problem.
What about Gerim? The Gerim and first paragraph.
Okay, that's a separate story. Now we're dealing with a Rebbe. We're dealing with the Koyach of the Shalsheles of Torah. But you learn from this pasuk. This is a very important point I want to bring out. When you learn from this pasuk that prophecy is not like that. There's no such thing that when it comes to prophecy, your prophecy must have been derived from a spirit of Ruach HaKodesh that went all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was Mekabel Nevuah Ruach HaKodesh Mekadosh Baruch when he went to Shemayim. And then it's certainly true, there's no question about Yatzel Min HaRuach HaShalof. Moshe Rabbeinu gave over his Ruach HaKodesh of prophecy to Yoshua. And he gave it over to the Zakenim. That's a given. He definitely gave over Koyach. But that does not mean, in order for a person to be a legitimate Navi in every single generation, he must have that Shalshalas. He must be part of that link going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. You see explicitly here from this Medrash, from Yeshaya, that there's no such thing as a Shalshalas of prophecy when it comes to prophecy. When it comes to Torah, yes, you must go back to Matan Torah to be part of the chain of Torah Shebal Peh, but not prophecy. Yeshaya says, although it's true all the prophets, generally they got their koyach from their predecessor, from the Rebbe, not me, I got it directly from the source. Yeshaya is living way after Moshe Rabbeinu, from Ruach Hashem Elokim Olai. It came to me. What does this pasuk mean? The Medrash says, I'm not like Elisha. Elisha only got his koyach from Eliyahu. I'm not like the Zakenim. They only got their koyach from Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm not like all these other prophets who the Torah says their father's name, they got their koyach from their father. I made it on my own. I'm a one-man show. And that's legit. We have a whole Sefer Yeshaya. This is Mamish from the Ikar of the Nevi'im, from the earliest Nevi'im. It's a very powerful thing, very important, you start to remember. There's Torah and there's Nevuah. Moshe Rabbeinu was both. Moshe Rabbeinu and Moshe is the Av HaNevi'im. In order for a person today, in later generations, to be part of the Shalshelis of a Rabbeinu, you got to go back. You got to be part of that link. In order for a person to be a Navi and Nevuah is long gone anyway, it doesn't make a difference, but in order for there to be a Nevuah, you don't have to be part of the Shalshelis of Nevuah. You can be your own man. Yeah.
Rambam has to shoot this Rambam. Is that everybody has a koyach to be a Navi?
That's what he says. I'm not familiar. Could be. It makes good sense. It makes sense based upon this medrash. Okay, let's do at least one more pasuk. I don't want to do one pasuk. Lekrosh not. What else is the role? And this parak is telling us the role of the prophet. So we already discussed in the previous pasuk how many things. Let's just count. Lavasra novim. That's number one. Number two. Shalachani lachavay shlinsh left bandaged. It's two. Likra l'shvuyim, there are three. V'lasudim pekach koyach, that's four. So far, he says, I have four roles. I have four separate roles as being a prophet. Next, number five. Number five is Likro shnas ratzon, to call out a year of ratzon, a year of goodwill, l'Hashem to Hashem. Okay, so he's referring, I guess, to the time it's Nechama, that's number five. This is going to be a good year. A year where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will find favor in his people. Number six, the Yom Nokom Leilo Kenu will be a day. Contrast a Yom with a Shana. First, the pasuk says that it's going to be for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a shnas rotzon. But when it comes to Hashem taking revenge against his enemies, the enemies of the Jewish people, it will be a day of nakam, a day of vengeance, le'elokeinu, for our God. That's number 6. And number 7, lenachem kol avelim, to give comfort to all of the mourners. 7. Number 8, lasum la'aveli tzion, to set for them. What will I, also means to set, what will HaKadosh Baruch Hu set? So it explains here, and the pasuk continues to explain what Hashem will set. Laseis lohem pe'er tachas efer. Hashem will exchange ash with glory. Pe'er and efer are the same letters, just rearranged. So there's obviously a connection between the two. Shemen tzason tachas edel. This goes back to the beginning of the pasuk. Hashem will set, will exchange oil of joy in place of mourning. And number 3, ma'atei sihila, a cloak, a garment of praise, tachas, in place of ruach kea, a spirit that is dark. A dark spirit, kea means dull, depression, weak. Weak and depression, K is weakness, depression. When you take the word K and you connect the word ruach, it means a low spirit. The korah lohem avele hatzedek. Hashem will call to the Jewish people. Ele means trees of righteousness. Mata Hashem, the planting, the sapling of Hashem lehispoer, in which Hashem will pride himself. So there are three things that Hashem is going to exchange. He's going to exchange Afer for Pe'er, he's going to exchange Evel for Shemen Sason, oil of joy. He's going to exchange a Ruach Kea in place of a Ma'ate Sila. Rav Schwabi wants to say this refers to the yellow star. The yellow star that Jewish people know, it didn't start with the Nazis. Wearing the yellow star started this something which the Nazis borrowed. I don't know the history, but I remember reading this a few times. The Nazis borrowed this idea of this yellow badge, of the yellow badge from previous generations.
Does anyone know? In Italy, the Jews had to wear a special yellow
hat. A special hat. There was also a badge in certain countries. It goes way back. And they borrowed from this. It wasn't their own idea to wear this yellow badge, which, as we know, the Magen David. So that brought upon the Jewish people, this is how he interprets the pasuk homiletically, a ruach kea, that we're like second-class citizens. You can't walk in the street. If you were found walking in the street without your yellow badge, that's capital punishment, murder. There'll be murder on the spot. Hashem will exchange that yellow badge for a ma'atei sihila, a cloak of praise, of sila of praise. If you want to say more,
badge of honor.
So if you want to focus, say a little tzioni of art. why did the state of Israel select the Magen David as this is brought down? I'm not coming to say my Torah. I'm just telling you what the Metzius is. Why it's very controversial, but why did they select Magen David as the flag? It's because of the Holocaust. So there's, you go online. I saw an exhibit online. It's an incredible exhibit. When they wanted to make the flag, it was anyone who wanted to submit an idea for the flag could send in an idea, and they have the finalists. And there was some type of committee, and there must have been hundreds. And I think it's all online. All the different flags that were suggested by ordinary people to the state of Israel, what should be the symbol for the Jewish flag. I don't know who the committee was. There are books and there's study on this. They selected the Magen David. And what I've heard this on Shiurim from, I think, Rabbi Yaakov Shachter. He said, if I'm not mistaken, he says because it was a response to the Holocaust. That since in the Holocaust, the Magen David was a symbol of degradation, that a Jew is despised, he's an ugly, good-for-nothing, curse to society. That was what the Magen David was. We're going to take that symbol that the Nazis how they look down at us, and we're going to elevate it. This is going to be our pride. This is going to be the flag. So if you want, you can mamash read that into what it says here. Ma'atei sihilo tachas ruach keya. Rav Schwab Kamat says this. Rav Schwab wasn't, I don't think Rav Schwab was known to be a Zionist. Maybe he was, I don't know exactly. A religious Zionist, he sure was, but whatever. I don't know exactly his hashkafa, but he Kamat says this. He says Kamat, he doesn't say the Magen David, the flag of Israel, but he talks about the Magen David in Germany, and it was a sign of ruach keya, and now it's been replaced with some type of mate sehila, which we don't know what that means exactly. But it's interesting, you study study Jewish history, you study the state of Israel, a lot of the things that went into the founding of this state were a direct response to the Holocaust. What do you think today, living 7 years after the Holocaust? No. State of Israel is a state of Israel, and the Holocaust is the Holocaust. Heiluchud v'heiluchud, there's no connection. That's not so. If you study very carefully, a lot of the things that were built into the founding of the state of Israel were direct response to the Holocaust. And one example is the Magen David. Okay, the badge, that yellow badge, is we're taking it from the Auschwitz on the uniforms, and you're putting it on the highest level on a flag to be raised above Eretz Yisrael. Okay. One other very quick thing. I'm way, way over time, as usual, but one other quick thing is that this is the makar for a chasan. A chasan is, you put ash on his forehead. Tachas pe'er. Pe'er is also a reference for tefillin, for Yecheskel. Pe'ercha chavoy shalecha. Hashem told Yecheskel, you're going to be in a state of mourning. I don't want you to mourn. I want you to do something unusual. I want you to continue to wear your tefillin. And the way Hashem refers to tefillin is with the word pe'er. A chasan is supposed to remember the churban of Yerushalayim. Im loy, im tishkach yimini, im eshkachech Yerushalayim. If I forget Yerushalayim, I should forget my right hand. You have to remember the churban of Yerushalayim. Al roish simchasi. At the time of your joy, you always must remember the churban Yerushalayim. And therefore, we put pe'er tachas efer. We're not yet holding at that matzav of pe'er tachas efer. The male we're holding at a matzav of churban. You have to put the efer tachas pe'er. So this is the minute. What? This is the minik. You have to. That's what the by before the chasen goes down to the chuppah. This is what is done. Efer tachas per. Rav David Cohn. I was reading yesterday his sefer Oil David. He has unbelievable sefer. Sometimes he mentioned on his art. He says this. I don't know from the minhagim, but by the goyim, there's something called Ash Wednesday. I don't know anything about it.
Can they make it in the sign of the cross?
So Ash Wednesday, they put. So he says they stole it from us. He says they stole it from us, and it comes from this pasuk as well. They put it on their forehead. Efer tachas pe'er, and they knew what it all comes from. The Jews, they used to put the ash on the place of the tefillin, so they wanted to copy us. They invented this mishigas called Ash Wednesday. This is what he writes in his sefer. Okay, let's stop here. Let's do some mishnah.